Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we are answering your listener questions.
Listener questions.
That's right, man.
You ready to do this?
Oh, I'm ready.
It's Listener Question Monday, and we've got five great questions from listeners, including one about crypto savings accounts. I'm really excited to dive into that one. We've got a question from a listener who's asking about buying a home when he lives in a submarine. That's going to be a fun one. As well as a question from a listener who's asking if everybody out there needs to file a tax return, even though she is a lower wage earner. She's got a lower income. So we're going to get to that one, plus two others during this Ask How to Money episode.
It's got to be tough to tour a house while you're living in a submarine. Like, how do you actually...
Zillow, baby.
Yeah, I guess you're just doing what like two-thirds of buyers are doing these days, and you're buying
more
a
like
house
five-thirds
without...
of buyers, man.
Five-thirds.
Like, even people who aren't actually going to buy a house are, you know, sitting there flipping through Zillow.
True. Yeah, but I think, no, the stat is actually that people make an offer, 66% of buyers or something in that range make an offer without actually having set foot in the house these days. COVID has changed things up when it comes to buying a house, but we'll get to that and more.
That's crazy.
In this episode, man, I wanted to share something a little personal, though, real quick. Not super personal, but I had to get a new...
Nobody wants to hear about your new underwear line.
Right.
Remember that one from a few months ago?
I had to get a new oil pan put in the Honda Odyssey, the 06 Odyssey. And it was one of those things that I was surprised by that I didn't realize this was an expense that was going to have to happen. But I guess at some point in recent years when I was getting an oil change done, some nefarious mechanic, like they glued the drain plug back in. And so it made the oil pan unusable. And I've got a good mechanic that I took it to. And yeah, he was like, I'm sorry, man, but we got to replace it. This is one of these like $450 expenses that I just wasn't thinking was coming down the pike.
That
like,
sucks.
Yeah. And I think it just goes to show, though, that I want to say I'm an optimist. And I think sometimes like I expect things to continue to go a certain way. And those kind of things like slap me upside of the head, but I can't budget like an optimist.
Welcome to reality, buddy.
Exactly. I hope for other optimists or really anybody out there, you can't budget like an optimist. You can't budget hoping that things continue to go swimmingly that you never have, you know, in a $450 oil pan expense. It's just one of those things that is going to come along in your financial life. And it's important to kind of make room for those things ahead of time, because it's a double whammy if you also don't have the money on hand to pay for that unexpected expense. So just want to kind of share that it happens to the best of us, right? We all have these costly items that come along from time to time that we weren't even anticipating. But yeah, planning for the unexpected is really important.
Yeah, planning for those expenses. You know, there are going to be expenses that arise with a 16-year-old vehicle, but...
It's a teenager now, bud, you know?
It requires a little bit more money than it used to.
That's right.
It makes me think about... We talked about this recently, too. It makes me think about just some of these house expenses, like on the outside of our houses, that nobody gets excited about dropping a load of money on, like a roof, for instance. Like, you can't really see your shingles. It's not an expense that you look forward to, but it's something that has to be done. Tree work is another... one that you and I we discussed recently. It seems like there's a lot of tree work happening in our neighborhood these days, and we're saying how we think it must have something to do with the stimulus money, because it's one of those things where it's really painful to part ways with money for a tree service to show up and maybe take down a couple trees. But you know, when some money lands in your lap, when it lands in your bank account, it's something where you're like, okay, I wasn't expecting that money anyway. Let's maybe take care of some of these things that I don't really want to spend money towards. But
these are the kind of adulting
same thing with car expenses.
Nobody wants to drop money on, but that's like part of the thing being a grown up. You have to do it. So
yeah, and make sure too you've got a mechanic that you trust. This is a mechanic that you've gone to for years, and you've got a great relationship with him, so you can feel better about that at least.
Yeah, I know that he's telling me the truth, and he's never steered me wrong before when it comes to my car. It's just still one of those things. It's like, really, man? And then like you kind of like want to blame the messenger and be like, oh,
I hate you.
But I don't actually hate you.
And so. You're like, did you try using the torque wrench or something?
Yeah, exactly. Like naming tools.
Put some some muscle behind it, dog.
But let's get on to the beer that we're having on this episode. Matt, this one is called Bumbleberry. It's a honey blueberry ale by Fathead Brewery. And this one was sent to us by Rich. He's a friend of the show. He actually hosts a podcast called Budgets and Brews that he asked me to be on recently. That was kind of fun hanging out with him, and super nice of him to send this beer our way. And we'll give our thoughts at the end of the episode.
Yes, we will. So let's go ahead now and get to our listener questions. And all you listeners out there, if you have a question for us, we would love for you to submit your own question to us. You can go to howtomoney.com/ask. We've got some simple instructions there as to how you can send us your voice memo. And hopefully very soon we will be able to answer your question. But first, Joel, let's go ahead and get to this first question that has to do with cryptocurrency.
Hi, Joel and Matt. This is Ellie in Denver. And I just recently heard about a investing website called BlockFi. It seems really interesting to me because they are giving 6%, 8.6%, 5.25%. They're giving interest rates that high on cryptocurrencies that you hold in their accounts. And the one that interests me the most is called Gemini Dollar, and it's always worth a dollar because it's pegged to the US dollar. And I think that you could buy, say, 500 Gemini dollars and then earn 8.6% per year on that amount. I haven't opened an account yet, but I'm curious if you have heard of it already or what you think about it. Thank you.
Oh, Matt, so many questions popping up these days about how to earn more money on savings because the rates for savers are atrocious right now. And so no wonder Ellie's looking to try to find some way to make more money on the money she's just kind of got hanging around.
Yeah, I get it.
Me too. I hate having money in a savings account these days because 0.5% is about the best you can hope for. And yeah, so Ellie, let's talk about crypto savings accounts. The allure is strong with these. And I think there's a lot of people out there looking into crypto banks because they're springing up all over the internet, promising stellar rates of return, some even as high as 12%. I've seen those hanging around. But it's important to note that money that you put into one of these accounts is not like putting money in your traditional bank or your online bank or even a credit union. It's not even close because there is no FDIC insurance when you deposit your funds at one of these cryptocurrency online banks. And since the crypto space is still very much like the Wild West, you're definitely putting your money at risk if you decide to put your savings in one of these quote-unquote banks. And you just can't even call it a bank, really, based on what it is. And these websites aren't even insured by the SIPC, where brokerage firms like Vanguard and Fidelity are able to say that $500,000 of your money is insured. And we think that this should cause you to hit the brakes from really even considering these crypto bank accounts really any further.
Yeah, what's crazy about these companies, too, is that they're promising such high returns in order to attract more users and more customers, essentially, right? And so, like, it's almost like the higher return that they're promising, like, the worse off it's going to be. Because, again, because they're not even SIPC insured, I mean, they could fold and you would be completely out all of that money. Like, there is no guarantee that you're going to, that you would, you know, ever see any of that money again, especially if you're a smaller, quote unquote, investor. Because, I mean, even if there was, like, some sort of lawsuit, like, you're going to be at the very end of the line when it comes to actually getting any type of money back. And so, yeah, let's talk some more specifics on how these crypto savings accounts work. Within one of these accounts, you're holding cryptocurrency, and you could have, you know, many different varieties in there. And that crypto stash is then being lent out to other investors and other traders. So not only are you getting into the cryptocurrency game by owning some actual cryptocurrency, but you're going above and beyond on the risk scale by also lending out what you own. And so while those rates of return do sound pretty nice, they aren't all that great for the enormous risk that you're taking on. There's almost like this sort of double whammy when, like, the way I think about it is like, I'm imagining if I haven't ridden my bike in like a year, I'm really out of shape, right? And also,
which isn't true,
which is would never happen. Let's be honest. And something else that would never happen is, imagine then if I also left my bike out in the yard all winter long, for another whole year. But then imagine I'm like, okay, I'm going to hop on my bike and get across town for some important meeting. Well, there's a good chance then I'm going to be doing maybe a good amount of walking, whether it's because I'm so out of shape, I'm sucking wind, or because my bike's broken, right? And so there are two huge risks here when you have your money invested in these companies. And while that might be okay or acceptable if this isn't money that you're necessarily counting on, right? And so, again, going back to the bike analogy, like if I was on my way to an important meeting, that bad idea to do that. But if I was just out for a ride and it didn't really matter, you know, in that case, you know, it could make sense for you.
And specifically because we're talking about savings here.
Exactly.
Usually this is money that you need. And even with, you know, for most of our listeners, I know for us, like our investments, we're not even really willing to put that at huge risk. And so, yeah, Matt, Ellie mentioned the website BlockFi, and explicitly on that website, it states loss of principal, which is the money that you put in there, is possible. And it certainly is possible. And I'm not going to say it's likely, but that is never the case with the savings at your bank because of what we talked about, the FDIC insurance. Essentially, these crypto banks are out there combining cryptocurrency exchanges like Coinbase and peer-to-peer lending, a company like LendingClub. And that means just a much higher increase of volatility and risk. And so, yeah, I would steer pretty much everybody away from these things because it's just too risky of a bet.
Right, unless it's just money that you 100% don't care about, right? Like if it's play money, if it's money that, it needs to be money that you wouldn't lose sleep over at night.
I haven't met a dollar that I didn't care about yet.
I mean, you know.
And the ones I don't care about, I spend on craft beer.
Folks make different types of bets, totally. You know, different risks that they're willing to take. But in the end here, essentially what we're saying, when it comes to your savings and when it comes to your investments, we want you to keep those separated. You know, it's okay to take measured risks with your investments. You can afford to lose money that you've, you know, invested this year if the market goes down, because you know that you won't need that money until years or even decades down the road. But that's not the case with your savings. You want to keep that money safe and liquid in case you need it. And so that makes these crypto savings accounts, to put it nicely, less than ideal for that task. And so keep your investments and your savings distinct and separate. And if you are going to put any of your money towards some of those crypto savings accounts, make sure it's less than 5% of your overall portfolio. That's, you know, one of the ways that we designate, quote unquote, play money.
Yep, totally. All right, Matt. Well, we got more questions to get to, including one about taxes. Like, do you need to file taxes if you don't make much money? We'll talk about that and more right after this break.
All right, we are back from the break, and we're going to hear from a listener who listens to us underwater. I'm going to explain how that works. But first, let's hear this tax question.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Erica from Grand Rapids, Michigan. I heard on another podcast that a single individual who earns less than $12,400 in a year doesn't have to file a tax return. I made a little bit less than $12,000, which included about $1,000 from DoorDash. Given that DoorDash and other gig economy jobs are different with taxes, I just wanted to know if I can skip filing my taxes this year or if I would get in trouble for not returning some of that DoorDash money. And is the $12,000 rule even a thing? Is it even true? Thanks so much.
All right, Matt. I love this question. I feel like this is definitely something that a lot of people have, especially when in a year where you might not have made very much money. Do I have to file taxes?
For instance, if you're a college student, maybe you made $10,000 last year.
Yeah, some side income, whatever. Yeah. And yeah, you're like, I don't really want to go through that hassle. Filing taxes seems like a burden. And I understand that. It's not the most fun task in the world, right?
Sure.
But yeah, since tax day is two weeks away, Monday, May 17th, by the way, for all you slackers.
Exactly, 2 weeks away.
Yeah. It's true, Erica, that you don't have to file taxes if you're single and you make below the $12,400 threshold. That's because of the standard deduction. That is the amount of the standard deduction. So basically, you won't owe any taxes on any income until you start making more than $12,400. And you're not required to file a tax return. You won't get into trouble with the IRS if you don't do it. But you might still want to do it because of the many ways you can benefit if you do file your taxes instead of kicking up your feet and deciding to not do it at all.
Yeah, there's some major benefits to filing your taxes if your income is a little bit lower. If you don't file, you won't be able to qualify for a tax refund. And so if you had taxes withheld from your paycheck, you won't see that money. You might also qualify for the earned income tax credit, which you wouldn't get if you don't file a return and claim it. And so the cool thing about that specifically is that it's a refundable credit. And so even if you don't owe any taxes at all, this credit will still get paid to you. That's pretty sweet, but sadly, 20% of folks who qualify for the earned income tax credit, the EITC, don't claim it. And so make sure that you claim it if you qualify.
Yeah, a lot of people missing out on free money that way,
yeah,
who have it coming to them. And yeah, one other thing too, Erica, that's definitely worth mentioning. If you're listening to this show, hopefully you're investing in an IRA with some of the money that you made. And if you're investing in, let's say, a Roth IRA, you might also qualify with your low income for the Savers Tax Credit, which is one of the best tax credits around, Matt. I've always found this to be one of the most fascinating tax credits available, and most people don't know about how this works either.
It's a nice little carrot. It's a nice little incentive.
Exactly, especially for low-income folks. It really only applies to low-income folks. The federal government will essentially help you on your investing journey by handing you back up to 50% of the amount of money that you invested, depending on your adjusted gross income. And Erica, you could qualify for that highest 50% Savers Tax Credit based on your income. So let's say you invested $2,000 last year into a Roth IRA. You'd get $1,000 back in the form of a tax refund.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, the Savers Tax Credit is one of my favorites, and it's another thing, just like the Earned Income Tax Credit. They're two really important tax credits that low-income folks really, really need to know about. You don't want to miss out on those because there's a lot of money at stake.
Yeah, it's like a 401k match from the federal government.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And Erica, you know, so many things are based on your tax return, like getting a home loan. Basically, filing your taxes shouldn't be all that hard for you. It'll be free via IRS Free File, and you might get thousands of dollars in money that you otherwise wouldn't receive if you didn't file a return. So we would recommend that you go ahead and do it. There could be a lot of money that you're leaving on the table if you, yeah, do what Joel said, like kick back, throw your feet up, yeah, relax over the next couple of weeks. Instead, see if there are any funds that you're eligible for.
Yeah, we'll link to the IRS Free File site in the show notes because that is the place where people who make, well, I think it's under like $72,000 a year AGI can file their taxes and not pay a dime in order to do so. And like Matt said, it's less difficult than you think it's going to be. It's really not that big of a deal, especially with all the money that could be at stake here for you, Erica.
Totally worth it. Yeah.
Yep. All right, Matt, let's get to the next question. This one comes from a listener who listens to How to Money in the Ocean.
Hi, Joel and Matt. My name is Nate, and I'm a longtime listener of the show. I'm currently in the Navy, and you guys have kept me company and planning my financial future while spending many, many months underwater in a submarine. I've wanted to get some advice about getting out of the Navy in less than 6 months. I'm 27 and have a great credit score, own my car, and will have at least $35,000 in savings by the time I get out of the Navy. I'm returning to school and will be a recipient of the post-9/11 GI Bill, which will pay for my tuition and provide me with a housing stipend of about $1,400 in cash per month. I was toying with the idea of purchasing a home rather than renting. I'm able to utilize the VA home loan program, which allows me to purchase a home with no down payment but still secure a competitive interest rate. I figure that because a mortgage is typically the same, or in a lot of cases, even a little less than monthly rent, it would be beneficial to have my monthly housing stipend going towards owning a home rather than renting one. I have about 2 years left of school, and other than summers, do not plan on working during that time. Between my savings, any small amount of leftover money from the housing stipend, and a small income about $400 per month from doing Navy reserves after I was separated from active duty, I would definitely be able to cover roughly double my current monthly budget, even without working during the summers. I just wanted to see if you guys thought this was a good idea or if it's too risky. Cheers, Nate.
All right, Nate, thanks so much for that question here about housing. And by the way, that's super cool that you've been listening to us underwater. That might be the closest that we'll actually get to being in a submarine. Although, now that I say that, I feel like maybe when I was a little kid, I feel like maybe on a field trip, I did actually walk through a submarine, which was, I think even as a kid, I remember it being way smaller than I was expecting it to be.
It made me think that actually Nate might be super happy in like a tiny house because he's used to living in small quarters.
That is so true.
Maybe that's one way to save money. Like he doesn't need nearly as much square footage because like...
It's like 600 square foot studio. This place is huge.
Yeah, exactly. It probably will feel that way. And like,
yeah,
it just makes me think, Matt, actually a while ago, we had Doug Norman on the show.
That's right.
Who's a fellow Navy man. And he also lived on submarines for long stretches of time. And yeah, the way he talked about like getting out and then heading back into you know, a house, like you just don't need as much when you're used to living in such tight quarters.
Yeah, he touched on possessions and how he basically was able to just remove a lot of stuff from his life pretty easily because of all of his campaigns on the submarine.
Yeah. Nate, if you haven't listened to that episode, we'll put it in the show notes, but that's one you should totally go back and listen to.
Episode 166. But Nate, let's get to your question. Well, first, you know, great job on taking care of your finances, as well as your credit. A lot of younger folks in the military spend a lot of their paychecks and then some. Yeah, there's a lot of predatory lending that takes place. And so a lot of military personnel sometimes find themselves in debt.
Precarious financial situations.
Yeah. And so I hope you've been able to be a good influence on the rest of your fellow submariners. That's how Doug used to say it. Because I used to always thought it was submariners, but Doug always said submariners.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
All right. just something that pops in my mind. But the VA loan program is great because typically you would have to pay PMI, private mortgage insurance, if you don't put that 20% down. But for the folks that serve our country, you can get a 0% down loan with excellent terms without the costs of additional monthly insurance. And by the way, it's called a VA loan because it's backed by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. And so that's why VA loan borrowers can put down less. They've got the military on their side.
That's true. Yeah. And they deserve it for their service, right? They deserve the better loan terms. I will say it's really important, Nate, to think about the other costs that go alongside of owning a home. Even though it sounds like your housing stipend will easily cover the mortgage payment, be sure to listen to another episode 323, before you go ahead and make this decision. Even if the amount of the mortgage is less than what you would pay in rent, that doesn't make it a slam dunk. And that's because there are additional costs to owning a home, and they can really add up. Renting is not throwing money away. I feel like I need to repeat that because that's
a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah, they just assume that renting is like the stupidest thing in the world. I think that, you know, part of it is the cult of home ownership that has happened in our society. And owning a home is great. Like we've said that many times too, Matt. We love owning our own home, and we think that it's a worthwhile ambition of a lot of people. But at the same time, renting a place is not throwing money away. So that's why we recommend that you only purchase a home if you're willing to own it for at least 7 years. And so that's one big thing that you really need to consider, Nate. Before you commit to this idea of owning a home, how long are you actually going to be holding on to it?
That's right. Yeah. So, Nate, when you move in the future, because you're going to move, I guarantee it, a question you need to ask yourself is, would you be willing to hold on to that house or that place and rent it, even if you're living hundreds of miles away? If you're okay being committed to this home for the long term, even if you aren't living in it, then we think it can make sense for you to purchase this place. It could be a great financial move for you. But, you know, if you're just planning on selling it maybe just 2 or 3 years down the road after you buy it, this isn't going to be a great decision because of the transaction costs. They're pretty steep. And we have no idea what the real estate market might look like at that point in time. So yeah, the time frame is the crucial question here. It's not necessarily about the numbers, because you talked through your specific financial situation, right? Like how the different incomes that you're going to have coming in. I think you said it's going to be double what your monthly budget's going to be. Like, that's great. I mean, it sounds like you're in a great financial situation. It's less about the specific numbers in your case, and it's more about the actual time frame and how long you're willing to hang on to that place.
Yeah, man, I feel like it's similar to when we talk about whether people should be savers or investors, right? There's a time frame that becomes crucial when you're answering that question. And if you're like trying to get that money in and out within 18 months, you got to be a saver. And that's specifically because of the volatility that occurs in the market. 18 months later, like you could have less money than you started with. And so you want to be a saver to make sure you retain that capital. It's a similar thing when it comes to buying a home. That time frame is ridiculously crucial. And it's less about the volatility and more about the transaction cost that can eat into that too. And you could have less money than you started with because of the extreme cost of buying and selling homes.
All right, we've got a couple more questions, including one about a duplex and a way to sock away even more money if you own your own business. And so we'll get to both of those right after this.
All right, we're back. We got two more questions on this Ask HTM episode. And this next one comes from a listener who's trying to figure out which retirement account is the right one for them.
Hey, Matt and Joel. Longtime listener, first-time caller. My name is Samantha, and I live in Portland, Oregon. I have a question about the difference between a solo 401k and the SEP IRA. I am a small business owner and work fully for myself. I do not have any employees, and I currently have an SEP, and I'm not sure that is the most advantageous for myself. You had kind of talked about it on one of the most recent episodes, but I would really love some more guidance and clarification on which one is the better option. Thanks so much.
All right. Well, Samantha, first of all, thanks for listening to the show for so long. You mentioned that there at the beginning of your question. And by the way, this is a good question. When it comes to owning your own business and, yeah, investing more of that money, you can go either way. Since you don't have any employees, both a SEP and a solo 401k are both good choices. And both can allow you to invest a whole lot of money, $58,000 for 2021. Each and every year in these tax-advantaged accounts. And the reason that many business owners actually opt for a solo 401k instead of a SEP IRA is because you can actually max out that account sooner without having to earn more because of how the cap works on the contributions. And so because of the way it works, with a solo 401k, you can contribute the entire $58,000 while earning around $150,000. But to max out a SEP, you're actually going to need to be earning closer to $225,000, which is a pretty big increase. And so if you're wanting to invest big money, it's easier to do so with a solo 401k.
Yeah, let's discuss these in just a little more detail, Matt. The way it works is that the solo 401k rules allow you to contribute as both the business owner and as an employee. Your business can contribute a huge amount of money to that account in profit sharing, and you as an individual can contribute another nice chunk, up to $19,500, even more if you're over 50 years old. But you're still limited to the overall amount of $58,000.
Yeah, just right? When you make those contributions, you just have to switch hats. Like, you have to put the employer hat on when you're making the employer contributions, and then when you're making your own employee contributions, you got to put on that employee hat.
I feel like I need a special hat as an employer over here.
We don't have any hats.
No, we need new hats.
That should actually, if and when, and I'll say when, because one of these days we'll have some merch, but we'll totally make some hats.
All right. Get like a Hat of Money trucker hat or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Another perk too is that you can choose to contribute to the Roth version of a solo 401k. The employer contribution, which is the biggest amount that you're allowed to contribute, will be funded with pre-tax dollars, but you can elect to have your personal contributions go in as after-tax funds. And so it's great from that future tax planning perspective. It allows you to diversify that tax liability, and it gives you more flexibility when you're like drawing down those funds in retirement. So I think that's one of the main reasons I like the solo 401k more than the SEP, is because it does offer more of the flexibility when it comes to the type of money that you're putting in.
Yeah, and that's something that the SEP, or which by the way, that stands for a Simplified Employee Pension. That's something that a SEP doesn't allow. So for listeners out there who are self-employed and don't have a solo 401k set up yet, you can do it with any of the low-cost investment companies like Fidelity, Vanguard, Schwab as well. So we would recommend going with one of those. But Samantha, for you, unless you're looking to invest a really high percentage of your income, a SEP IRA will work totally fine. It's going to work great for you. So for example, if you have a net profit at around $100,000, you can contribute nearly $19,000 towards a SEP, which is really solid. That's a lot of money. That's a high percentage of your income that can go towards a SEP. But if you wanted to invest more of your money into a retirement plan, you can always roll it over to a solo 401k. That's always an option for you.
Yeah. And when it comes down to it, Matt, both of these accounts are really good and allow, you know, self-employed folks to be able to sock away a lot of money for their future. One of the other interesting things about a SEP, especially since we're closing in on tax day, is that you can actually still contribute to a SEP for last year, but you can't still contribute to a solo 401k for last year. So if Samantha is specifically looking to stash more money away for tax year 2020, she's going to have to do it in a SEP IRA instead of doing it in a solo 401k.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's just kind of another caveat.
Little perk of the SEP, which yeah, sounds like she's already got going and it's working out pretty great for her. So
yeah, totally. So Samantha, best of luck. Either way you slice it, you're doing great. But if you're looking to, you know, massively crank up the amount that you're investing, a solo 401k can often be the best route to go. But all right, Matt, let's get to one more question. And this one is about buying a duplex.
Hey, guys. My name's Matthew. I'm 32 and I live in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm currently in the market to buy a duplex to start moving forward with real estate. And I have a few questions. Currently, my credit score is a 721. And I'm trying to raise that a little bit over the next 6 months. I don't have any debt aside from my vehicle. I do have a couple credit cards, and my question about that is, should I request a limit increase? I don't use the credit cards that much, but I'm wondering if increasing the limit will help my credit score or if it's going to hurt me. With that said, I'm also interested in a little bit more information about the leases you all create for your rental properties. So any information you all can provide on creating a lease for your tenants, as well as screening them, will be very helpful. Thank you.
Joel, did you just hear that question? This is coming from Matthew in Atlanta, who's looking at duplexes. This could be me.
Are you submitting a question for your own podcast?
The stockpile of listener questions was getting kind of low. So. Matthew, we would totally recommend for you to get a duplex if that's something you're interested in. I hope you're going to live in half of it, hopefully, and rent out the other half.
House hacking.
Yeah. House hacking rocks. It's one of the best ways to build wealth and for you to easily get into real estate. And another perk, too, is living in that duplex will also mean that you don't have to put down as much money and you're going to get a better rate versus if that was a straight investment property.
Yeah. Owner-occupied gives you better terms.
Absolutely. But let's go ahead and talk more about getting the best mortgage interest rate. You mentioned how your credit score is at 721. That's a great credit score. But if you can get that score up to at least 740, that would be huge to help you score the top-notch rates that lenders are currently offering right now. That's one of those cutoff points that if you can get above 740, you're going to be in that premium rarefied air.
Yeah, it's like hitting 300 in Major League Baseball. Like that's kind of the line. It's like, oh, you're an excellent hitter.
You're big time now.
Yeah, exactly. Same with the 740 credit score. Lenders are going to look on you favorably. And yeah, too, requesting a credit score increase is one way to potentially help increase your score. Credit card companies haven't been too keen on doing that lately, though.
Yeah, it kind of depends on your specific situation as to whether or not they feel comfortable about you raising your limits.
Yeah, it never hurts to ask, though, if you've been a responsible user of that card and you can point to that, then that's ammunition on your side to actually make that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would, however, benefit from paying off your credit card balances 2 or 3 times a month. The lower that reported balance is, the better it reflects on your credit. And that's just the easiest and most immediate way to boost your score, specifically for someone who's close to that line, right? That's really, really important. And especially before you make a really big move like taking out a mortgage, you want to make sure you're above that line because it could save you thousands of dollars for years to come. You want to do whatever it takes. And one of those things that it is in all likelihood going to take is just paying off your credit card balance more frequently for the time being.
That's right. And now let's assume that you have a place and you're looking at maybe putting together a lease for the other half of that duplex. Bigger Pockets, they sell state-specific leases for $99. They've got great resources there when it comes to real estate investing. And they've just got a great community there as well. Also, Nolo, they allow you to make unlimited leases for just $39 a year. So that's something you can look into. And you can check into other online legal sites as well, like LegalZoom. But just be wary of going for the free forms. This is one area that you don't want to cheap out. It could cost you a whole lot more on the back end, in particular if this isn't something that you have experience doing. As you're getting started, it would totally be worth it to spend some money. And so on the note of experience, you could also ask someone who has been investing in real estate for many years if they would share their lease with you.
Yeah, I think you're right, Matt. It's totally cheap to try to get some sort of free lease that might not be legally sufficient. And think about all the problems that could cause if your lease doesn't meet, you know, state law requirements, or if there are some things in there that don't sufficiently protect you from the damages or something that you might incur. You want to make sure you have a thoroughly buttoned up lease, and it's worth the money in order to get that. Also, too, let's talk about screening, Matthew. You mentioned screening tenants, and I will say that one step when it comes to investing in real estate is 90% of the battle. If you can screen tenants well, your foray into real estate investing is going to go well. And so we would highly suggest you listen to episode 269 for more information on managing rental properties in general and then screening tenants specifically. We went into a lot of detail there, but basically if you just want the quick and dirty, the most important factors are running a credit check and running a background check, checking employment, and calling the prior landlord of that tenant. If you perform all of those steps, you're going to all but ensure that you're going to have a good tenant moving into your property, one that has treated other landlords fairly in the past, who has good credit and pays their bills on time. Those are the kind of things that you're going to want to make sure that you look at before you have that person sign a lease. Like there are people sometimes that drive up, they seem really nice, But then you look at those things and you're like, man, I don't know. They're not really treating their obligations well. They're not paying their bills on time. They're 3 months late on their credit card bill. And that's a red flag for sure to say, I don't think I want to rent to this person. They're probably not the kind of person that's going to take care of my investment of my home very well.
Exactly. Yeah. They look a lot less nice on paper. And specifically, too, don't skip out on checking their employment and calling their previous landlords, because, you know, getting that background check, running that credit, those are all things that don't require you to interact with other people. There's a lot of different services out there that allow you to run that information. It's really easy and it gets delivered to you in a nice, neat package. Making these phone calls and verifying their employment and previous landlords, it takes a little more work, you know. You have to actually talk to somebody, but it's also, I think, the most important, man. Yeah. Like, specifically talking to a previous landlord, you can learn so much by talking to their current landlord.
Literally 15 minutes. Oh,
not even that. Sometimes I'm talking to somebody for like 90 seconds.
It can feel awkward because you're like, well, tell me about this person that, and they're like, they don't really know who you are, but
they're used to it.
You got to make the phone call. It's massively important.
Yeah, make those phone calls, and you can just learn so much just how they talk about their previous tenants. Because if you ask them, like, one of the questions I ask is, would you rent to them again if they were to reapply? And if there's a pause, you can just tell how they answer the question, as you know, if it raises any red flags, and then you can kind of link those red flags, you know, from their credit report, from their employment, and then if there's all these little small red flags popping up, well, then that might be an instance where you kind of go with your gut. So all that to say, all you potential landlords out there, don't skip out on making those phone calls.
It might be talking to the prior landlord, it might be the number one thing you need to do.
Yeah.
It might give you the most information, actually, in the screening process. All right, Matthew, best of luck to you finding an awesome duplex, man. I hope it works out, and I hope it gets that real estate bug going inside of you, because it's a beautiful way to start generating wealth. All right, Matt, let's get back to the beer that we had on this episode. This one is called Bumbleberry.
It's
a honey blueberry ale. Apparently, it's award-winning. It says so on the can.
Says it right there on the can.
Right.
Yep. It's stamped on there.
Fatheads Brewery. So it's got a enormously large noggin, a dude with a sweet mustache on the front of the can. And this was given to us by Rich from Budgets and Brews. What were your thoughts on this beer, man?
I will say that it was easy drinking, flavorful, with a nice little sweet touch of blueberry going on, man. It reminds me a lot of Sweetwater Blue, which is actually a beer here out of Atlanta. But yeah, it has a similar blueberry note, like kind of right on the edge of the tongue. I liked it, and I'm glad too that we were able to have a beer from Fatheads. This is a brewery that some other listeners have mentioned before. We've never had any of their beers before. Those guys are there out of Ohio, so I'm glad that Rich was able to donate this one to the show.
Yeah, I thought this one tasted a little bit like a blueberry muffin, like a really, really light, easy drinking blueberry muffin.
Yeah.
So if you're into that,
if you're into drinking your muffins,
you're gonna like this
beer
one.
Is for you.
That's right, and it just really is a super chill beer for like a nice warm day, and we're into warm days these days. So, all right, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you for submitting your listener questions. And if you've been listening and you've got a question that you would like Matt and I to tackle here on an upcoming Ask HTM episode, just go to howtomoney.com/ask. There are simple directions there for you to submit your voice memo, and hopefully we can take it on the next Ask How to Money episode.
That's right, and you can find our show notes up at howtomoney.com. We'll make sure to link. We actually referenced a lot of past episodes during this episode, so we'll make sure to link to all of those, as well as any other resources that we may have mentioned. And also, too, we appreciate all the reviews. We've gotten a lot of reviews in recently, and so if you are one of those folks, we seriously appreciate you. And for everyone else who hasn't, no threats, but we would appreciate it.
Are you going to threaten our listeners?
We're still going to make the we're still going to make the podcast, but reviews are great.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, there have been some really sweet ones lately.
They help.
We really appreciate it. Yeah. And yeah, it does let other people know what they can expect when they tune into How to Money. And yeah, it's our goal to provide the best money-saving money advice out there in the podcast sphere. So yeah, thank you guys for listening.
Absolutely.
And that's going to do it for this episode, Matt. So until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.